Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Ted Turner died today. He was 87 years old, and if you spend any time reading about his life, you'll find no shortage of things to admire. The man who built CNN from nothing when the entire television industry told him nobody would watch. The sailor who competed at the highest level and won the America's Cup and earned the nickname Captain Courageous. The owner who bought a struggling Southern baseball team, put it on a satellite, and turned it into America's team. The visionary who created the Goodwill Games because he genuinely believed that athletic competition could bridge things that politics could not. There's no shortage of Ted Turner to celebrate today. But I want to talk about a chapter of his life that isn't making it into those tributes. A chapter that belongs specifically to us, to soccer people in Atlanta. Because Ted Turner was one of the first people in this city with real resources and real vision to look at this sport and say, this belongs here, and I'm going to put my money behind that belief. And he did, long before any of us knew that he actually had. To understand what Turner did with soccer, you have to understand how Ted Turner thought about sports in general. He didn't buy the Atlanta Braves in 1976 because he was a lifelong baseball fan. He bought them because he needed programming for his UHF television station, WTCG Channel 17, and live sports was the most reliable content a local station could put on the air. He bought the Hawks the following year for the exact same reason. Sports were not a hobby for Turner. They were inventory. But they were also something more than that, because Turner was a genuine competitor who understood viscerally what sport does to people, what it does to a city, what it does to an audience when the thing on the screen actually matters. By 1978, WTCG had become a superstation. Its signal was going up on a satellite and coming down into cable homes across the country. The Braves were on television in Nebraska, in Montana, in places that had no reason to care about an Atlanta baseball team before Turner gave them a reason. He had figured out something that the rest of American media had not yet grasped, that sports plus cable plus satellite equals national reach. And he was always asking the same question, which sports and how many? That same year, one of his advisors, a man named Michael Guerin, recommended soccer to him. The pitch was simple, and it was correct. Soccer was a great television property, especially internationally. Turner was already thinking about what his superstation could become on a global stage. A sport the entire world already watched, available for a fraction of what baseball and football rights cost. That was exactly the kind of under-leveraged asset Turner had built his career identifying. The North American Soccer League was in its heyday at this point. He started making inquiries. Memphis, Toronto, Buffalo. And then he found the Colorado Caribous. The Caribous, and yes, they were called the Caribous, they were a mess. They had finished last in their division in their only NASL season in Denver. Their ownership group had fractured. The franchise was available, and Turner's associates, Dick Cecil and Al Thornwell, both connected to the Braves organization, moved quickly. By early August of 1978, they were in Denver. Preliminary discussions were confirmed, and then the reporters called Turner directly and asked him, "Are you involved?" His answer was pure Turner. He quoted Old Man River. He said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that he did not hear nothing, he did not see nothing, he just kept rolling along. He wanted nothing to do with soccer. Why would he want a soccer team? Well, Ted Turner had already written the check. On August 28, 1978, the NASL Board of Directors voted 22-2 to block the sale. Not because of anything Cecil or Thornwell had done wrong. They had found out that the new Atlanta franchise planned to put its games on Turner's Superstation, which was now reaching cable homes across the country. The NASL was in the middle of negotiating with ABC for a rights deal worth $1.5 million. One owner reportedly jumped to his feet at the North American Soccer League meeting and shouted, "You mean the Atlanta team will be telecast to Lincoln, Nebraska?" The irony of that moment, it's almost too much. The same people who were desperate for their sport to reach a national audience, voted 22-2 against the one man in American media who had actually figured out how to build a national audience for a sports property that nobody else was into at the time. Now, here's the part of the story that I find genuinely remarkable and that I only know about because of documents sitting in Dick Cecil's business papers archive that is housed at the Rose Library at Emory University. 4 days before that vote, on August 24th, Cecil had already written to the North American Soccer League's own general counsel explaining the stadium lease terms. The Chiefs would pay $3,000 per game or 10% of gate receipts, whichever was greater. Cecil signed that letter as president of Braves Productions Incorporated, the Turner-controlled subsidiary that handled non-baseball bookings at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. And the very next day, a $2 million letter of credit had been issued in Thornwell's name. The machinery of this deal was fully in motion before the league had even cast a vote against it. Then 5 weeks after the vote that blocked them on September 27, 1978, Turner's attorneys sent another letter to the North American Soccer League Executive Committee. This one laid out the legal structure of the partnership in plain language. The franchise would be held by Atlanta Professional Soccer Limited. Turner Communications Corporation was listed as the limited partner. The letter noted, and I want to read this exactly, Turner Communications Corporation is publicly held and is controlled by R.E. Turner. And it committed Turner's company to funding the partnership's losses on a current basis for 3 years. This letter exists. I've seen it. It's in the archives at Emory University. Turner's lawyers told the league the whole story 5 weeks before his own corporate financial report did. He had been the architect of this deal from the very beginning. He had simply chosen, in the most Turner fashion imaginable, to let everybody else announce it for him. On October 3rd, 1978, the NASL voted again. Thornwell had brought a Turner Communications cable expert to Chicago to explain to the other owners how satellite television actually worked and why it was an asset rather than a threat. This time the vote was unanimous. The Colorado Caribous were coming to Atlanta to become the reborn Atlanta Chiefs. Publicly, Thornwell described Turner as nothing more than their landlord. That characterization lasted 6 weeks. On November 7th, Turner Communications released its financial report. Buried in the document, the company had advanced $1.5 million to assist with the acquisition and had received a limited partnership interest in return. The stated reason was explicit. The investment would provide additional live professional sports programming for WTCG. Thornwell, when reporters called and asked him about it, he was almost casual. He said, "We just didn't feel it was newsworthy or pertinent." Of course, the lawyers had already told the NASL all of it. Turner had never been hiding. He was just letting the story develop on its own timeline. To understand what the Chiefs actually were inside Turner Broadcasting, there's nobody better to ask than Terry Hansen. Terry was the television voice of the Chiefs, working alongside play-by-play man Bob Neal. He was also the club's director of operations and eventually its general manager. He joined me on a Soccer Down Here podcast back in 2018, and what he said about Turner's priorities has stayed with me ever since.
Yeah, but if you look, I was smart enough to figure out then, as the Braves have been, that they're part of a television company. Mm-hmm. And even though we had a sports team, it was a television company that was writing the checks, and it was Ted's idea to get soccer for programming purposes.
That is the clearest statement of what the Chiefs were that I've ever heard from someone who was inside the building. And Terry was inside the building in every possible sense. He's calling games on WTCG, running front office operations, and he was trying to figure out how to sell a sport to a city that wasn't yet sure it wanted to be sold. Atlanta soccer had grown a lot since the first version of the Chiefs and everything that Dick Cecil and Phil Woosnam and many others had done to plant the seeds. They were blooming by this point, but not to the point that was fully sustainable for a professional soccer team. Hansen also told me something that reframes the whole story of why the Chiefs ultimately folded.
And there was just no ambiance. And that was bothersome to me as a front office person and as a television person. But Ted never really cared about the attendance. He was more worried about what the TV numbers were.
Turner had signed a 5-year deal with WTCG for television rights. Road games went out on the Superstation to cable homes across the country. the indoor version of the Chiefs playing at the Omni during the NASL's experimental winter season. That was a genuine success. They led the league in attendance. The atmosphere was electric. But the outdoor television numbers were not moving, and that was the number that Turner was watching and paying attention to. Terry Hansen tried repeatedly to get the team into a smaller stadium, arguing that 13 to 15,000 people in a stadium that size would feel like a sellout rather than a footnote in a stadium built for 60,000 baseball fans. Turner's response to that pitch was something that Terry said that I won't forget.
Well, it would take a hell of a lot of sales by me on Turner. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was in the cards. I mean, in fact, he didn't really understand why we wanted to go to the small stadium.
Right.
Because he was just used to the baseball team being there and not many people being in there for the Braves games. So he just wanted a television product.
That's the whole story. That is what the team was. That's what its purpose was. And it didn't really deliver on that point.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the final home matches in August of 1981 that the Atlanta Chiefs played was at DeKalb Memorial Stadium. 13,000 people plus came. It looked exactly like what Terry had been arguing for all along. The atmosphere was there. The passion was there. Soccer people in Atlanta were there and in good numbers. And it filled the stadium, but it was also too late. The Chiefs folded at the end of that month, August 28th, 1981, after being eliminated in the playoffs. They won the Southeast Division in the NASL that season, but the Jacksonville T-Men ended their season. 3 years to the day after the NASL first voted to block their existence, the Chiefs folded. Total losses across the three seasons came to somewhere between $5.5 and $7 million. And here's something important to say about that moment, because I don't want Turner's exit from soccer to read as a failure of belief. The NASL itself was already coming apart. Franchises were folding across the league. Spending was out of control, trying to keep up with the cosmos. Cecil and Robert Wessler, who had become chairman of the board, they came away from league meetings that year frustrated that other owners were just refusing to address the financial reality that they were all facing. The league that voted 22-2 against Turner's cable vision in 1978 folded entirely in 1984, 3 years after the Chiefs played their last match. Turner didn't abandon a thriving enterprise. He read a sinking ship correctly at the exact moment that his cable investments were demanding everything that he had. CNN had launched in 1980. CNN 2, which became headline news, was coming. The capital that might have kept the Chiefs alive for three more seasons while the NASL existed, that money instead went to building the most significant news organization in the history of television. It's impossible in retrospect to argue that he made the wrong call. But here's the thing about Ted Turner and soccer. He never stopped believing in it. In 1990, I think this gets forgotten in history at times, Turner Broadcasting paid $7.5 million for the exclusive United States rights to the World Cup in Italy. TNT carried 24 telecasts. The play-by-play voice on those broadcasts? Bob Neal. The same Bob Neal that Terry Hansen had taught the game of soccer to while they were calling Chiefs games on WTCG 11 years earlier. The rights fee that Turner paid for that single tournament, that was roughly equal to the total losses that the Chiefs had over those three seasons. In the mid-1990s, Turner Sports president Harvey Schiller pitched Turner on buying Arsenal Football Club using TBS stock. The deal didn't happen. It was undone by questions about stock liquidity ahead of the Time Warner merger. But the instinct was identical to the one that Turner had acted on in 1978. Soccer was a global content asset, and the man who owned the platform should own the sport. It never quite worked out that way. He did keep coming back to it. His original read of the sport was correct. The property that he tried to put on the Superstation in 1979, 1980, 1981, it's now one of the most competed over rights packages in global media, whether we're talking Premier League, Champions League, World Cup, MLS. What Turner saw at that time has become exactly what he thought it would be. There's one more thing I want to say before we close this out. Ted Turner wasn't just a media executive who happened to invest in soccer. He was a genuine, by God, sportsman. He competed. He raced sailboats at the highest level. He won the America's Cup. He created the Goodwill Games, not primarily as programming, but because he believed in what athletic competition does to people, what it does between people, what it makes possible when nothing else can. He sat in the stands at Fulton County Stadium for Braves games, for Chiefs games. He sat at the Omni for Hawks games, and he felt what a crowd feels. He understood sport from the inside. Soccer, to Turner, carried all of that potential and more. It was the one sport the entire world already shared. And this was a global citizen of the planet in Ted Turner. You don't write a $1.5 million check in 1978 when you didn't have a whole lot of millions at that point. You didn't navigate a hostile league vote. You didn't absorb 3 years of losses. You didn't then, 12 years later, pay $7.5 million for World Cup rights. You didn't nearly get involved in one of the biggest clubs in the world just because of pure cold programming logic. You're involved in those conversations because you believe in sport. You believe in this sport, but you, more than anything, I think for Ted Turner, you believe in sport as a concept. You understand what it means to the people who love sport and what it can mean to the people who have not yet discovered it. Terry Hansen captured something true when I asked him about the legacy of the Chiefs in that 2018 conversation.
I like to tell people that was part of our 37-year plan, was to have it be as successful as it is now. But I'm really heartened by the success you guys are enjoying. Congratulations for that.
The 37-year plan. I love that line. And I'd add now that the plan has kept paying out since Terry said it. This summer, the FIFA World Cup comes to Atlanta for the first time. Matches will be played at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in a city that the world knows, in large part because of what Ted Turner built here. CNN made Atlanta a dateline. It turned a southern city into a place that the world looked at every single day. When Atlanta made its case to host the 1996 Olympics, it was making a case for a city that Turner had spent two decades helping the world understand. The international city that fell in love with Atlanta United when it launched, the international city that can host a World Cup in 2026, that city was built by a lot of people over a lot of years. And Ted Turner was one of the most important people who has helped build Atlanta. He would have loved the summer. He would have sat in the stadium. He would have felt what he always believed a crowd could feel when sport was right and the moment was right. He would have loved every single minute of the World Cup this summer. Atlanta's soccer story, it didn't start with Arthur Blank or an MLS announcement or a sold-out night under the retractable roof at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It wasn't an overnight success. It started in a lot of places over a lot of years and with a lot of people who planted seeds in the ground that they would never see fully bloom. Ted Turner was one of those people, and today, as the tributes pour in for everything that he built, I wanted to make sure that we said that out loud. Rest well, Captain Courageous. Thank you for believing in the sport that we all care about so much, and thank you for everything that you gave to Atlanta, but maybe more importantly, thank you for everything that you gave to the entire planet. Thank you.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.